Tonight's shiur is Leila Nishmas Simor Rochel Bas Rav Tzvi Aryeh. Parshas Nasai has a lot of very important topics to get to. It's the longest parsha in the Torah. I'd like to say we're going to get all the major topics that I want to talk about, but I don't want to run into shailas of Nedarim, so we'll just call it Blineda, we'll get to all the major topics. Some of the major topics discussed in this week's parsha is the counting of Shevet Levi and the uniqueness to each one of Levi's three sons. Another very important lesson in the parsha is Shiluach min Hamachana. We learn in this week's parsha that someone who's Tameh, whether it be Tziras or Zav, he has to be removed from all three of the camps. Although that mitzvah seems to be irrelevant, as Manazer, the Medrash tells us that this mitzvah, this din, is relevant l'doreis, even future generations. Then we have the parsha of Gezel HaGer, if someone steals from a ger. And then we have the two major events that everyone knows of a parsha's Nasai. We have the Soita, we have the Nazir, and then we conclude with a Chanukah-related topic, the Chanukah Samizbeach, and the bringing of the Karbonis of all the Nasim. That's the basic overview of Parshas Nasa, what to expect in this week's Parsha. Unfortunately, we weren't here together last week to discuss this, but it's well known that Parshas Bamidbar is always recited the Shabbos before Shavuos, almost always recited the Shabbos before Shavuos, and there are many reasons given to why it is that way. If it's always if Bamidbar is always read the Shabbos before Shavuos, Nasa is always going to be read the Shabbos after Shavuos. So we're going to have to see, and we will point this out, and I think if we keep our eyes open, we'll notice obvious similarities. But there's a reason, the same reason why Parshas Bamidbar was read always before Shavuos. There are similarities between why Parshas Nasa is always read after Shavuos. I will point out some, but I think if you have that in your head as you go through the Parsha, you'll see some of them maybe even more clearer than I will bring out. We know that Parshas Nasa is the longest Parsha in the Torah, has 176 psukim. We also know that Maseches Baba Basra is the longest Gemara, and by chance, it also has 176 blot. The longest Perek Tehillim in Perek Kuf Yutes has 176 psukim. Now, I'm not a very big gematria fellow, but it is something to mention that they all carry the number 176. What is the significance of the number 176? So, if Moshe Wolfson, the Rav of Emunas Yisrael in Bar Park, the Mashgiach from Torah V'Das Yeshiva, he discussed this in his Sefer, and he points out the following horror. He says that we know Svira is 7 weeks, so Parshas Nasai is the 8th week. Now you say, what's the 8th week? Although the Torah describes Shavuos as the seven weeks, and then you have Shavuos, we know in Chazal that the 8th is always above Teva. That's why Bris Milah takes place on the 8th day. The creation is 7 days. 8th is Lamaila Menat Teva. So says Rav Moshe Wolfson, we're holding now in Parshas Nasa, we're in, so to say, 8th week. He says that we know that the Aleph Beis are made up of 22 letters. So Klal Yisrael is Lamaila Menat Teva, we're 8, plus the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis, which is Torah. You can't read Torah without the Aleph Beis. So the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis, says Rav Moshe Wolfson, 22 times 8 is 176. So that's how we get to why Parshas Nasa is 176, because it's right after Kabbal Satayra. It's 176, is the 8 weeks, the Lamaila Menat Teva, plus the 22 oases of Torah. It's all about Torah, because the Levium were 22,000 Levium. The Levium represented the carriers of the Torah. So it's 22 times 8. It takes us to 176, and that's why there's a connection between Parshas Nasai being 176, and Baba Basra being 176, and Kapitel Kuf Yates, which talks about Torah being 176, because they all share the similar idea. Okay, we were Yotze Chassidus for the night. We can move on. It's a nice verse from Moshe Wolfson, Zogzunten Stark, the Rav of Emunas Yisrael. Parshas Nasa, the opening of the parsha is really a continuation from last week's parsha. Last week's parsha, as it's so known in the secular world as Sefer of Numbers. Bamidbar is all about counting, numbers. We count Bnei Yisrael. So in parshas Bamidbar, we counted Bnei Yisrael, and then we counted Shevet Levi separately. But the way Shevet Levi was counted was somewhat interesting. In Parashas Bamidbar, we're introduced to Levi. We know Levi is one of the Shvatim. Levi had three sons, Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. Now, of those three sons, Kahas was known to us because Kahas gave birth to Amram, and Amram had Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. That's Klal Yisrael's history. But yet, in the oldest brother was Gershon, Kahas, and then Merari. That was the way they were born. Yet in Parashas Bamidbar, who was counted? Kahas. Then we get to Parshas Nasai, and the Torah opens up Nasai es Reish b'nei Gershon gam hei. Yeah, Gershon also. Let's not forget about Gershon. So the question is, why wasn't he first? If he was the older brother, Gershon, Kehos, and Merari, shouldn't he have been counted first? Why was Kehos counted first in last week's Parsha? So the Medrash asks this Kasha, and the Medrash says, because Kehos, although he wasn't older, he had something special. Says the Medrash, I'm quoting you the words, he says, El Shekdimu HaKos of Kehos, Bishvil Kavarat Torah. Because Kehos represented that part of Levi's family, Kehos, they were the ones who carried the Urim. They were the ones who were involved in the Urim. Therefore, since they carry the Torah, they represent Torah, they go first. Although they weren't the elder, they weren't the Bechor, because of the Chashivas that they carry the Torah, they represent the Torah, they were counted first. So writes the Medrash. So we see clearly a Chashivas given to the Torah, because they represent Torah, they carry the Torah. That's why Gershon, that's why Kehos, although not the older brother, was counted first. We also see a third son to Levi. There's Gershon, Kehos, and Merari. Three different brothers. And they had three very distinct jobs in the Mishkan. The Beis Avraham points out that Kehos, he had the most respectable job. He carried the Aron. He carried the Mishkan. He was a representation of spirituality. He was it. He was what we in life strive to be, connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then you had Gershon. Gershon was the Bechor. Gershon also carried important parts of the Mishkan. The curtains. You need the curtains. But the curtains aren't exactly the most holiest of pieces in the Mishkan. And the last group was Merari. Merari carried the beams and the sockets. Amish, the lower level jobs. So the Beis Avraham points out that all these three different types of people are really various steps in life that we have. We have the step in life where we're in the highest level, where we're striving to spirituality. Then sometimes we have a Yerida, we get knocked down a level, get knocked down a level to doing like Gershon. We're still involved in spirituality, but it's the curtains. It's not where we really want to be, but we're still involved. And sometimes in life we get knocked down to Merari, a lower level, where we're mamish, not, we're disconnected. So points at the base of Ram, we go through these different stages in our life of different. But he says, but all of these three, they all still carry the banner of being B'nai Levi, and they were all still doing Avodas Hashem. As long as we're still striving for Avodas Hashem, although we might have knocked down from what we were striving for, we wanted to do the highest level, but as long as we're still focusing on Avodas Hashem, it's still an okay path in life. Maybe that's another reason why we read this right after Shavuos. Right after Shavuos, we're all fired up, all excited. And then as the days go on, we realize, you know what? We dropped from what we wanted to. We lowered a level from what we expected to be. And we get very quickly, we give up. Says the Torah, no, read the Torah. There's different levels. There's the highest level, and there's another level, and there's another level. As long as you're still in the game, you haven't given up completely trying to strive for spirituality, it's okay. So maybe that's bedafka why we have this parasha. Of the three sons of Levi, the different jobs that they each had, to remind us that it's okay sometimes to fall under our expectation as long as we're still striving. Others suggest, some sefer suggest, that each one of these brothers represented different levels of Klal Yisrael. One was when Klal Yisrael gets kicked out of the nation. One is when Klal Yisrael is striving. One is when Klal comes in Mishumad, when we totally become affected by the nations around us. Different stages of Klal Yisrael's development. So there's definitely a theme over here about the three children of Levi and what they represent and what they mean for us. Moving on, after the Torah counts Levi, all of a sudden we have a new parsha. The Torah tells us a parsha, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Tzavis b'nei Yisrael v'yishalchum min ha-machane kol tzeruah v'cholzav. You must kick out. You must send away anyone that has tzeras, anyone that's a zav, and anyone that's tamei nefesh. Three examples of tumah. One is a mitzayra, which we know we spoke about comes from Lashon Hara. Then you have a zav. Then you have a tamei nefesh. Someone touches a dead body. So that Satmar Rebbe points out in the Sefer Divrei Yoel, these three really represent the three averus chamurais. He says, the zav represents gili arayis, the tamei nefesh represents shvichas domim, death, and the tzerua represents mitzayra is avodah zarah. So writes the Divrei Yoel, quotes it from a medrash. And it's not just three examples. The three most severe averus that we have. Why exactly is the Torah telling this to us? So the Torah tells us you have to rid them from the camp. And the Divrei Yoel points out, the Sam Rebbe points out, the medrash says two chidushim about this parsha. First of all, this parsha is relevant l'dayris. For future generations, we'll have this mitzvah. Secondly, the medrash says whenever it says the word tzav, it's trying to be mizariz you because you don't want to do it. Why would you not want to kick people out? Says the Medrash, because it costs money. That's the end of the Medrash. So Frank the Samar, well, first of all, what's going on over here? How could this mitzvah be relevant in Bizman Azeh? You think today we have the right to kick people out of the community that we don't like? People that are not living the way it's supposed to, just throw them out? It doesn't work like that. Secondly, ask the Samar Rebbe, where's the chasar and kiss involved in this? You kick a guy out of the community, where's the chasar and kiss? Said the Samar Rebbe, a beautiful idea. The Devar Yoel says, if you read the Pesukim, there's another funny thing. It says in the Pasuk that you're supposed to do this, and it says, Vayasu kein b'nei Yisrael, the Bnei Yisrael did this. Vayishalchu Aisam al Chutzalmachi. Sent them out. Kashadibur Hashem al Moshe. Keinosu Bnei Yisrael. Ask the Samar Rebbe. It's repetitive. You told me twice they did what the Bnei Yisrael, what Hashem asked. Said the Samar Rebbe, you have a totally misunderstanding of this parsha. This parsha doesn't mean picking people up and moving them. Says the Samar Rebbe, this parsha means that when you see tumah around you, the way you combat it is by you do the right thing. You do Torah mitzvahs. The pasuk means Vayasu Kein Bnei Yisrael. The Bnei Yisrael did Kasha Dibar Hashem HaMoshe, means they did the Torah mitzvahs. When there's tumah around you, says the Samar Rebbe, you know why you combat it? You don't pick them up and throw them out. You completely become engulfed in Torah mitzvahs. You focus on your spirituality. That will cause them to disperse. That will cause them to break down and to go away. Says the Samar Rebbe, so where's the chasar and kiss? He says, many times you have people in the community that are very valued from a financial point of view. They're big donors. They give a lot of money. You want them around. You're telling me now you should engulf yourself in Torah mitzvahs, and these people will just go away. But we don't want them. We want their money. Says the Samar Rebbe, no. The Torah said, yeah, get rid of these guys. Although you might have argued, maybe I should take their money for the moysid, for the yeshivas, for the community. Says the Torah, no, even if there's a chasar and kiss. They can't be around. These people represent the Gimel Averis Chamur, says the Samar Rebbe. There's no room for them to be around. They must be completely removed. Although it will come at a cost. You won't be able to get their money. But you have to. The Torah demands that we rid ourselves from these people. How? Not by kicking them out. Not by throwing them out. By we serving Hashem properly, they will either leave on their own, or, he writes a little bit more chassidish, the sitra acharon, the negative things that they create will fall away on its own. I'd like to go a little bit more of a litvish slant on it, is that when you become more spiritually strong, they will just leave on their own. They'll feel that they don't have a place, they don't feel comfortable, they'll just leave on their own. So if you want to combat evil, it's not always about throwing things at them and picketing them. If you live a life of spirituality, they will feel uncomfortable, and they will leave. That's the way I think the Samar Rebbe is explaining these psukim. There happens to be an interesting halacha, the stipler, in Meseches Hoyrius, I think it is, discusses, if you read the Pesukim, it sounds like, who has this chiyuv to rid the community of the Tzeru and the Zav? The Zav himself? Or Bezdin? The stipler is medayik from the Pesukim, that the Zav himself can stay around. Bezdin has a job to pick him up and throw him out. The Zav doesn't have to get up. If you look at the Pesukim, it says in the Pasuk, it says, V'yishalchu, and you should send. Who's the they? So the stipler says, Bezdin, it's Bezdin's job. Not me, I can stay here. If I'm a Zav, I'm a Tzeru, I don't have to leave. It's not my mitzvah. It's Bezdin's mitzvah to get me out of the location. So learns the stipler, Pshat in the Pasuk. What's interesting is, the Medrash points out that the first time Klal Yisrael had a Zav, or a Tzeruah, or any of these negative character traits was only at the Chata Egel. Says the Medrash, once we got to Kabbalah Satayr, everything was cured. The Medrash tells us an unbelievable idea, which we all know of. The Medrash tells us that when we got to Kabbalah Satayr, all machalos, all sicknesses were cured. No one was sick. No one had ailments. Everyone was perfect. So when did we reach this level of chesrayness, says the Medrash, at the Chata Egel. When we got to Chata Egel, that's all of a sudden when things came down. That's when we lost this high level of Kedusha. That's when people are getting sick again, and people had chesrayness both physically and spiritually. That all happened, says the Medrash, at Chata Egel. Which means that Kabbalah Satayr Klal Yisrael reached a level of perfection. So maybe that's another reason why we read it after Shavuos, to remind us that we just reached this level of perfection. And what brings us away from it? Our own sins. The Chata Egel was us. So when we had our own Kabbalah Satayr over Shavuos, we reached, halavai, all of Klal Yisrael were healed on Shavuos, but we reached a certain level, so to say, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of perfection. And now, if we break away from that, it's our own actions. We are taking away that perfectionism that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us at Kabbalah Satayr. We are doing it with our own actions, just like Klal Yisrael did it when they sinned in the Avera of the Chetah Egel. So maybe that's possibly another connection between Shavuos and Parshas Nasa. Moving along in the next parasha of the Torah, is another interesting Torah. The Torah says, "Daber al bnei Yisrael isha yisha ki yasa mikol chatos adam." He will do any sin. Lemol ma'al b'Hashem. he will rebel in Hashem. What did he do so bad? So if you continue reading the Psukim, the way Rashi learns and the Gemara learns, we're referring to a person who steals, but he doesn't steal from a regular Jew, he actually steals from a ger. Because the pasuk goes on and says that if you steal and you are found guilty, so you pay a fifth. Says the Torah of Imeila Ish Goyel, if the person you stole from has no one to pay it to, so Rashi asks, what do you mean, no one to pay it to? Everyone's got a cousin. Somewhere, everyone's got a distant cousin somewhere. How could there be a metzias of a person that has no relative? Says Rashi, we're talking about a ger. Ger should is guy kikotin shenayla domin. He has no family. He's all alone. And that the Torah says. So where do you? Who do you give the money to? Then you give it to the kehanim. That's this parasha of the Torah. So the Sforner points out that the when a person steals from a ger, it's not stam stealing. It's stealing in a way that creates an unbelievable chalasha. You steal from a regular Jew, so we know we were born as Jews, we know Judaism, we know there are better and worse members of society. When you take a ger, take a guy who was living on, we'll call it the other side, and he says, I want to join Judaism, this is perfect culture and this perfect religion, and the first thing he sees is he gets ripped off by another Jew. Says the Sforner, it's such a chalashem. He was under the impression that this is it. He searched and he researched and he found that this is the religion of choice. And he finds in this religion, there are people that are bad. Says the Sforno, it's a terrible, terrific, terrible, terrible Chilul Hashem. It always reminds me of the famous joke story about a yeshiva bacher that needed special milk in the yeshiva. And every single time he had a special milk, someone always took it. So he put up a big sign, Lo Yisigzo, don't steal. And every single time, Kesed and Kesed, the milk was taken. So the next time he put up a big sign, it's Chol of Stam. No one touched the milk. It's sad and true at the same time. You know, our hasogas are so off sometimes. Says the Sforno, it's such a terrible chil Hashem when a yid, a ger, this guy is, you know, new guy, ready to see Judaism, ready to join, and all of a sudden he sees, this is what it's all about. It's a shreklecha chil Hashem. Maybe this is another pshat, possibly, into why we have this right after Shavuos. What happens on Shavuos? We get the Torah, we get the mitzvahs, we're now fired up, we're all ready to go, and we're Torah Diki Yidin, and we go out to the streets, and we create a Chil Hashem. Not on purpose, but accidentally many times. And this, we have to remind ourselves of this lesson of the Sforno. It's so much more powerful, or so much more shreklich, so to say, when it comes to people that represent Torah. Rabbi Yisachar Fran writes in one of his recent Svarim, he says he believes today every Orthodox person has the status of a rabbi. Today they're going, they don't know, everyone looks like a rabbi. You're a rabbi, he's a rabbi. We carry a responsibility. And when we, who are supposed to be the Yama Nivchar, we're supposed to be better, when we either do it to non-religious Jews or to other Jews or to other non-Jews, we create a terrible Chil Hashem. So therefore, says the Sforno, the chesaron over here of stealing from a ger is a terrible level of Chil Hashem. And Baruch Simon in his Sefer points out that maybe another reason why we read the parsha of Nosa right after Shavuos is because of this parsha, of the parsha of Ger. We just said that. Why does the Ger have no relatives? Because Ger should this guy cut in Shanoi Ludami. You see, then a person goes to a Ger, he's a whole new person. It's a whole new entity. His relatives are no longer his relatives, he's a new person. So he was saying that maybe that's what Kabbalah Torah is. We became new people. We had a new Kabbalah. We became a new entity. We were not the same Jew we were yesterday. We're a whole different person. I'd add to that, it's mavur like that in many places, because Reb Matasyahu Salman has a kasha. If you look in the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to all the nations and he offered them the Torah, and they said Maksiv, what does it say there? So they went to the Christians or Esav, and they said, it says in the Torah Lo Yisirtzach. So, or Loisignus, one of the Averis, I forget which one already, and they said, oh, it's in our DNA to do these things, we can't accept it. So, Frektor Matisho Salman, that's a pretty good taina. It's in their DNA, what do you want from them? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you made them with these taivas. How do you expect them not to? So, Matisho Salman says, the mistake that they made was, they didn't realize that the Torah can change who you are. When you accomplish the Torah, you become a different person. Klal Yisrael also had desires, but when they became Am Yisrael, and they said, Nasa B'nishma, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped them change their teva and make them different people. So when we went through Kabbalah Sefer, we really changed. We were not the same people we were yesterday. So therefore, he says, maybe that's the lesson, that we have to realize that there's a heschachus that takes place through Kabbalah Sefer that we have to keep in mind, that we're not the same people we were before Shavuos. Before Shavuos and after Shavuos, we're different people through the principle of Gerish and Iskai Kant and Shanel Adami. Believe it or not, the Mikar for Tshuva, the mitzvah of Tshuva, it's almost El, right? Shine ready El, holding there. The Rambam writes, the Mikar for Tshuva is this parsha. It says in the Torah that the person who steals, visvado es chatosam, he has to do vidui. Zakti Ram, this is the Makar for Tshuva. So I'll leave you with the kasha, it's worth discussing. now, this is from all the places in the world. This is the Makar for tshuva. For a parsha, Gezel HaGer is where the Torah has to be promised to me to do tshuva. So maybe according to the Sforno, it's more muvan. Because according to the Sforno, it's not stam tshuva on Aveira. It's tshuva on the terrible Chil Hashem that you created. Maybe that's really part and parcel of every Aveira that we do. There's an additive element of Chil Hashem that needs the tshuva. Maybe that's why it's said over here. Achronim point out, the Pasuk that we just read seems to point out that every single time a person steals, he's doing two things wrong. He's bein adam lechaveroi and bein adam lemakim. Because it says in the pasuk, ki yasu mikol chatos ha'adam. He's doing a ched against man. When you steal, you're hurting man. It says the pasuk, but limo ma'al ba'ashem. You're then also causing a me'ila in Hashem. So the Achronim point out, there's two averis wrong when a person steals. It's not just a bein adam lechaveroi, it's also a bein adam lemakim. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein in his commentary on Chumash, he says, I don't understand. Why are you not allowed to steal? So most of us say, it's not right, it's not moral, it's not fair. Says Rav Moshe, if the Issek Zeila was just because it's not fair to the person you're stealing from, says Rav Moshe, you should be allowed to steal from a rich person. He doesn't feel it. You take a guy with millions and millions of dollars, you take $100, take $50, it doesn't even have a Roshim on him. Why can't I steal, says Rav Moshe? If the whole Yisrael Gzeila is because it's mine, you can't take my thing because it's not fair, I need it. Come on, who are you fooling? You don't need it. Says Rav Moshe, because that's not pshat in the Issek Zeila. The Issek Zeila is you're taking something that wasn't given to you by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's it. It's much more of an emunah-based avera. Zeila is HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm giving you what you need. Now obviously, when you go to work and you have a job, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to you through that mode. But when you steal, says Rav Moshe, you're getting something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want you to have. Rav Moshe says, I know that there's an option for Zeila, and you can choose to do Zeila. But that's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving you what you need. When a person accepts what he needs properly, kedasu gedin, says Rav Moshe, it's really emunah. You're living with HaKadosh Baruch Hu providing for you along the way. When you steal, what you're really doing is you're changing the mode of how you got things, says Rav Moshe. That's the chasaron to gzeila, a whole new understanding of the isser of gzeila. And at the end of this parasha, the Torah writes a very interesting line. It says in the pasuk, v'ish es kadoshav lo yihyu. Said the Chofetz Chaim, the way you read the pasuk like this, v'ish es kadoshav, a man who of holy, lo yihyu, that is really his. Said the Chofetz Chaim, the money that a person gives to Kedusha, to Tzedakah, that's the only money that's really his. That's real money. We talk about my money, this is really my money. Says the Chofetz Chaim, nothing's really yours. You don't take it with you to the next world. The only money that's really yours is the ish as Kedoshav. The money that was given to Kedusha, was given to Tzedakah, was given to the Kohen. Loy to him, you, that will be his. That's yours forever. The money that you gave to Tzedakah, that you can take to the grave with you. The money that you earn, you put in your pocket, it's not going to take you too far. Zog to Chofetz Chaim, the ishes kedoshav, the money given to Tzedakah, given to worthy organizations, worthy causes, loy to him, you, that will be forever. That will be his money, l'netzach, netzach. Very interesting point from the Chofetz Chaim. Says the Pasuk Vayter, the next parasha that we have is the parasha of Saita. Very, very difficult parasha in the Torah. The Torah discusses an idea of a woman who was warned by her husband not to be alone with a specific man. She was found to be alone with him. Now there's suspicion that she might have done something incorrectly. So the entire parasha of Saita, we take her, she goes to the Kayin, the whole procedure, and she drinks the special water. If she's guilty, she implodes. If not, it's a schooler to have children. That's the nutshell of Mesach Saita summed up in 30 seconds or less. Rashi says in the beginning of the parasha of Saita, says Rashi, a very famous Rashi, says Rashi, why did the Torah put this parasha of Saita right next to the parasha of giving stuff to the Kohen? Says Rashi, a very famous line. So Rashi, im atu ma'akiv matnas ha'kohen, because if you're not going to give the Kohen what he deserves, chayecha shetitztarach lovi yetzli lahavi lo yesa Saita, you're going to need to come on to him later on in life, because you're going to have to bring your Saita wife to him. So says Rashi. So this Rashi bothered me for a very long time. Let's look at these two procedures over here. There's a question of a husband giving what he needs to give to the Kohen. Then there's a question of a wife who's not behaving. What is the connection? Because I'm a cheapskate and I don't want to give my money to the Kohen. That's why my wife is going to go out and do things she shouldn't do. What's the posh connection between the two averes? So the Kli Yoker has a pshat, a very, very nice pshat. The Kli Yoker says like this. It says in Chazal, if you don't give money to the Kohen, you end up becoming poor. The Medrash says that the reason why your wife is going to think you're poor is because she's going to say, why is there no money at the end of the month? So we know there's no money because you didn't give to the Kohen. She's going to say, you know why there's no money? Because you blew it all on Zoinus. You went to Zoinus. So she says, oh, it's okay for you, it's okay for me also. Well, you're allowed to have outside relationships. I can also have outside relationships. So says the Kli Yoker, it's because he becomes poor. And the reason why he becomes poor is because he's not giving to the Kohanim. Once she sees he's poor, she suspects him to be doing things that are not right. So she says, oh, it's good for you, it's good for me. That's how the Kli Yoker learns pshat in this Rashi. The Ksav Sofer has a different pshat. He says, no. The pshat is, he says, I don't understand. Why would any husband put himself through the saita process? He says, it's much embarrassing. You want to really find out if your wife was mizana? You know, today we live in a world where, you know, talk shows make a lot of money doing this with DNA testing and yeah, guilty, no guilty. He says, except for, why would you care? Just divorce and move on with your life. Why would you go through the whole procedure, bring her to Besdin, sitting there waiting on Shpilkas to see, yeah, guilty, no guilty. Why do you need it? Divorce her and me move on. Sounds acceptable because the guy is so broke, he can't afford to pay the ksuba. Because since Chazal say if you don't give money to the Kayin, you go broke. He's so broke he can't afford to divorce her. Doesn't have the money to pay the ksuba. So therefore he has no choice, but he has to go through the whole process of the site. Reb Steinman in his Sefer Yosef Shachar says, of course there's no connection between the two procedures. No connection. But lo yitzur, this guy would have given, his wife would have done things sholeki did anyways. She was unhappy in the marriage. Says Reb Steinman, but if he would have given the proper money to the Kohen, that would have been Megan. That would have protected their Shalom Bayis. Again, there's no direct connection. But this would have been enough of a schus to save this relationship from going south. So writes Reb Steinman. Last pshat, and I think with two more pshatim, the last pshat is my own pshat, and this pshat I just saw today, I thought was interesting as well. Says, I saw in a sefer, that why would the husband not give money to the kohen? Because he's cheap, maybe, but he has a justification. He says to himself, why should I give to the kohen? He's an amaretz. Now I'm supposed to give presents to amaretz. Or how do I know he's miyuchis? Prove it to me, you're miyuchis. So he comes up with what we call frumatainas to why it's okay. So the wife says to the husband, why are you not giving to the truma? So he comes up with these from a cheshbonis. So the wife says, okay, you are from a cheshbonis, I'll come up with my from a cheshbonis. I can do X, Y, and Z, but with a from a cheshbon. I need this, I need that, I'm going to do this. Once there's a breakdown of real, honest halacha, so then it goes both ways. If he can play those games, then she'll play those games. If it's good enough for you to come up with these from a cheshbonis of why you're not doing what's right, I'll also come up. I'll say, I need this, and I need that. And therefore, there's a complete breakdown of all gedorim, all restrictions, all halachas. It becomes a free fall in the home. Last pshat, which is my own personal pshat, which I think is very true, is why would the husband not give money to the kohen? Because he's not a selfish person. He's very self-absorbed. He only cares about himself. He does not care about the kohen. He doesn't care about the way the Torah set up the rules was you're supporting the kohen because the kohen has a family. He needs to feed his family. You're very self-absorbed. You only care about one person. You care about yourself. So the reason why you don't give money to the kohen is because you don't care about anyone else. A self-absorbed person, if a wife is married to a self-absorbed person, she's taka going to go out and have an illicit relationship. You know why? Because she's unhappy. Because you're not giving her the attention she needs because you're very self-absorbed. If you're so self-absorbed, you probably can't care for your obligation to the kohen or for your obligation to your wife. So it will taka lead her to go and find someone that will give her the attention. Because you're so preoccupied with yourself, you leave no room to care for another person. So therefore, it's taka connection. Because you're so self-absorbed and you're only concerned about you, you're not going to make a very good spouse. That's going to lead your wife to look for attention from someone else, and that's going to lead us down the whole parsha of Satan. So there may be a couple of interesting pshatim to connect the two. Said Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, this is unbelievable, Rabbi Yaakov's way of thinking. Said Rabbi Yaakov, there's a very fundamental Musa Haska from the whole story of Satan. So most of us look at the story of Satan, and we look at it as, you know, unhappiness in the relationship. Says Rabbi Yaakov, there's a totally different angle to look at this. Asks Rabbi Yaakov, why did the Torah make the parasha of Saita? This whole shebang, having her go down and drink the water, why do we need it all? Says Rabbi Yaakov, because teva adam is, once a person has suspicion about his spouse, he will never, ever be able to live in a happy relationship with this person until HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself comes down and says, she's innocent. Says Rabbi Yaakov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this to help this couple. This couple obviously has trouble. And they're trying to solve the relationship. Says Rabbi Yaakov, forever and ever in his head, he'll say, I warned you. I told you don't be alone with this guy, and you were alone with him. And she can, says Rabbi Yaakov, she can bring two edim that she did nothing. The husband will say, I don't care. Two edim, not good enough for me here. Says Rabbi Yaakov, the Torah did a huge toiva for Shalom Bayis. The Torah came down. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said himself, listen, buddy, if she doesn't implode, that's a testimony for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that she's innocent. You can continue to be married to her. Said Rabbi Yaakov, the only way the husband would be able to get over his doubt in his wife is if HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyachol b'chvayilu ba'atzmo comes down and tells him she's innocent. And that's why we have the parasha of Saita. Says Rabbi Yaakov, it's mamash lehepach. The parasha of Saita wasn't to look negatively against the Isha. It was trying to bring the couple back together. After all the strife and the issues, the only way these two people, Rabbi Yaakov writes, teva ha'adam is, once he has a doubt about his wife, no matter what you will do, he will never get over that until Hashem himself tells him otherwise. That's why we needed the Mayim HaMo'irim. We need HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kav Yochel himself to come down and tell us It's like a boss call comes into the husband's head and tells him, listen, buddy, I'm Hashem, it's okay. Now the husband is ready to move on with this relationship. So explains Rabbi Yaakov, a very different outlook on the parasha of Saita from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetz. Right after the parasha of Saita, we're introduced to a very difficult parasha, I find very difficult to explain, of Nazir. The parasha of Nazir. Says the Rashi, why exactly is the parasha of Nazir written next to the parasha of Saita? So Rashi quotes, "Kolaraya Saita b'kakulay." Anyone who actually saw Saita implode in front of him, Yazar atzma min yayin. He will distance himself from yayin. So the obvious kasha is: so why does he have to become a Nazir? If you stood there in the base of Mikdash and you saw the effects of yayin, you don't need to then put on a barrier not to drink yayin. You saw it on your own. You saw it b'chush. You saw the effects of wine. You'll never go near a bottle of wine. So why do you then have to become a Nazir? This is the kasha many people ask. I think the answer is very simple. The answer is, throughout life, we always get hesiris. In different areas, different ways. But if we don't act on that hesiris, the hesiris will be lost over amount of time. Yeah, I remember I was in the base of Midrash 20 years ago and I saw a site implode. Okay, good. Old news. If you don't take the hesiris and do something with it, make it practical, that hesiris will eventually be lost. So although you saw it b'chush, you saw the site explode in front of you, and you say to yourself, this all happened because of wine, that's for the first a day, week. 2 weeks later, forget it. So therefore the Torah is saying you have to do something with the service. Don't just take a service. Take a service and do something. Make a takana. Okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Just to have inspiration for the sake of inspiration over time will eventually fizzle out and you will lose the inspiration. It's interesting. Reb Tzadok, Reb Tzadok points out that in Mishnayis, in the order of the Mishnah, it becomes Nazir, then Saita. In the Torah, it's Saita, the Nazir. Says Reb Tzadok, because we don't have the right to take a chance and say, well, if I see a Saita, then I'll become, you know, we got to become Nazir first, then Saita. We can't take the chance of saying, well, I'll be inspired, and then I'll see an event, and then I'll be inspired. No, we have to be inspired first. First we become a Nazir, and then we learn Saita. Interesting idea of a first Nazir, then Saita. The question is, what should our outlook be on the Nazir? Is a Nazir a great, great tzaddik, or a Nazir is an incorrect person? This is a very difficult question when learning the parasha of Nazir. Is the Nazir the highest level of spirituality one can achieve in this world? Or is a Nazir taka an incorrect way of avodas Hashem? The answer is it's a machlokes tanaim, and it's a machlokes rishonim. Is the Nazir, should we all strive to become a Nazir? Should we raise our kids that we want you to grow up one day and be a Nazir? Or should we raise our kids? No, Nazirus is not the best option. It might be a necessity at times, but it's not really the preferred option. What's interesting about a Nazir is restricted from drinking yayin. Yayin. Asks Rav Moshe, if the reason why someone becomes a Nazir is because he saw what happened to Beis HaMikdash, says Rav Moshe, you know that same story with the guy and the girl? It could have happened on schnapps also. Could have happened with vodka. They don't only, you know, do things incorrectly because they drink wine. I would argue today wine is probably not the more popular drink for people that are behaving incorrectly. You go to a bar, you go to a club, I'm sure they're drinking more schnapps and vodka than they are drinking wine. So ask Rav Moshe, so what does the wine do? Okay, I'm not going to drink wine. Okay, great. So you'll drink schnapps and bourbon and vodka and everything else. So where's that going to stop you from behaving incorrectly? Says Rav Moshe, because that's not the lesson. You don't stop drinking wine so you don't get drunk and do something incorrectly. Says Rav Moshe, a person has to put up barriers. Kedarim. I'm not doing this. I have a line I won't cross. Says Rav Moshe, when a person has barriers in life, he will prevent himself from doing things that are not correct. It might not be directly connected, because yeah, I won't have wine, but I'll have schnapps. But when a person lives a life, says Rav Moshe, of Gedarim, I don't cross this line. I will not drink wine no matter what. It's a whole different outlook on life. It's a different Mahos HaChayim. Says Rav Moshe, when a person's living life like that, then we are more confident that he won't do things incorrectly. So although the yayin might not prevent, you know, getting drunk, it will prevent you from doing things that are not good ideas because you have in your head the idea of gedar. The pasuk writes, "Ish o isha ki yafli lindor neder." The famous Eben Ezra. The Eben Ezra says, "What's the lashon yafli?" Comes lashon a pella. Another is a pella. Why on earth would he do this? You have life, because Baruch gave us wine, he gave us, you know, the ability to drink, he gave us the ability to become tummy mace, and you're going out of your way to restricting all that, you're taka pella, you're an amazement. Such a person is amazement. There's supposedly a tshuva, I didn't see it inside, I heard this quoted in the Minchas Yitzchak, in Dayan Weiss, he has a tshuva about a fellow who wasn't religious, he didn't really know too much about religion. He went to India to find himself, and when he was with all these other groups, he decided he was going to learn the Bible, and he saw about the Parsha of Nazir, and he liked the Parsha of Nazir. He became a Nazir. Then he became religious, and he realized, oh, okay, now I'm a Nazir. What do I do now? Now, in order to take off the Nazir, you have to bring a carbon. There's no carbon today. So how does one take off Naziris? It was Manazet. So the tshuva, I think, of Yitzhak Weiss was dying, maybe it was a Nazir B'tos. Rabbi Yelibowitz says that one of the most strangest shayos he ever got in Erev Pesach was a phone call from someone who said, I'm having a guest who's a Nazir, and how do I prepare the charoses? So Rabbi Yelibowitz said, you got bigger problems than the charoses if you're having a Nazir come to the Pesach Seder. So I guess apparently people today think they are Naziris, so they want to become a Nazir. So first of all, it's Isha Isha. A lady can become a Nazir also. It's not gender, there's no gender choice. A man or a lady can become a Nazir. What exactly is the Torah's outlook on Nazir? So the Torah says, no wine, no cutting of the hair. But what's interesting is, you're not allowed to become Tamei Meis. Says the Torah, Kol Yimei Hezirah Lashem, Al Nefesh Meis Lo Yavoi. Now, another connection, I know we've been discussing this a lot, between Shavuos and Parshas Nazir. The Gemara has a rule, Stam Nazirah Shloshim Yom. Where do we know that? So you believe it or not, we know from a gematria. It says in the pasuk yiyeh is 30. So stam nazir is 30. Learned from a gematria. Maybe that's the lesson I have after Shavuos. Everything is included in Torah and Torah Shabbat. It's all there. You got to look sometimes. Dig. You got to dig a little bit to find everything. Hakol ba. Everything is in the Torah. That's the lesson when we come off the Shavuos. We think it's only the Ten Commandments. It's only the Raisa, Torah Shabbat. Nah. All of Torah. All the things that we have today. Torah Shabbat. Torah Shabbat. Drashas. It's all included in the Torah. So he's now going to become Tamei Lemeis. Why not? Pasuk says, "Kol yimei hazirah l'Hashem, all the days of hazirus al nefesh meis lo yavoi." Not even to his relatives. So many people ask, why is he talking different than a kohen? A kohen is allowed to be metama to relatives. Why is he not allowed to be metama to relatives? So the Baal Turim says, because we don't want people thinking that this newfound spirituality is connected to derish alamesim. Baal Turim says this in many places. We're always afraid. That's why a kohen is allowed to become tameh. Whenever you have people of a certain level of spirituality, we're always afraid people think that they're connected to the dead. They talk to the dead, they schmooze with the dead, they interact with the dead. So these people will say, you know what, you're not even allowed to go near a dead person. A kohen, one of the higher levels of spirituality. You'll say, it's because he's discussing with the dead. You can't go near a dead body. You don't have to worry. Same thing with another, says the Baal Turim. We don't want people thinking that he's connected somehow to the dead. Says the Avnei Nezer, says the Sacher Tshuver, what's the difference between a Nazir and a Kohen? A Kohen, you're born into it. You don't have to do anything. You're born a Kohen. You don't have to take a test. You don't have to do anything. You're born into a Kohen. So therefore, your whole godless is from your family. So of course you have to be metamed to your family. Your whole Kedusha stems from your family. Says Avnei Nezer, that's why you're like metamed to Kohen. But a Nazir is a self-made man. He did it on his own. He decided to reach a new level. So therefore, says the Avnei Nezer, that's why he's not allowed to become Tamei Lekarevav. Says the Sfasemis even further. Says the Sfasemis, if you meet two millionaires on the street, one was born into money, and one was a self-made millionaire, who do you have more respect for? So we all know. The guy who was born into money, we say, big deal, you're born into money. The guy who came from nothing, built himself up, we have a little more chashivas for him. Says the Sfasemis, that's the difference between a Nazir and a Kohen. A Kohen, you're born into Kedusha. Okay, so you're born into Kedusha, nice, I'm very happy, you were born into the right family. So you're allowed to be with Tamil Kohen. But a Nazir, you went out of, you did something that you didn't have to, no one gave you this opportunity, no one made you this, and you go out of your way to make it, therefore we view it as a higher level, and that's why you're not allowed to be mitama lemeis. Says Rabbi Yaakov, such a brilliant ha'ara from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. He says, look at the pasuk. Who is a nazir not allowed to be mitama to? So the Torah says his father, his mother, his sister, and his brother. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov, what happened to his kids? Those are pretty important relatives. If the Torah is telling me who a nazir is not allowed to be mitama to, so the Torah doesn't just say relatives; it gives you details. It says dad, mom, brother, sister. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov, what happened to wife, son, daughter? Says Rabbi Yaakov, because your average Nazir was a single fellow. Usually weren't married people. Why? Says Rabbi Yaakov, because to be a Nazir, it's very difficult. You have to change your entire lifestyle. People that are older in life have no interest, or they don't want to, whatever it may be. Says Rabbi Yaakov, was generally found in the younger people. A single guy. He's willing to make these major changes in life. A person's already set in his ways, already married, has kids. It's not going to happen. And the truth is, there are people today in the Kiev world that will only spend money on college campuses because they say, a college kid, you have a chance with. You take a guy who's 50 years old with a wife and kids, he's not changing. You think all of a sudden the guy lived a non-religious life his whole life, he's got grown-up kids and this, all of a sudden he's going to give up? And there are organizations I know of that specifically will only give money to college campus Kiev and no other form of kiruv. Because in their mind, this is the only group that we have a chance to change. And this is what Rabbi Yaakov is really saying. Rabbi Yaakov is saying that the younger people are much more nachas, they're much more open, so to say, to change, because they haven't lived a full life. You take a person who lived a full life, it's more difficult, but it's a gevaldik diuk. Whether or not you agree with this on a metzias level, but the diuk is beautiful in the psukim, where the Torah clearly discusses where the Torah clearly discusses the relatives and it leaves out children. No, I would assume not. La halacha not. He's just being medayik from the psukim that they don't discuss it. Bleib Chasman, the mashkiach from Chevron Yeshiva, has a beautiful idea. He says, well, again, why is a kohen allowed to be metame to relatives and not a nazir? So the Baal Turim is discussing the idea. We're always afraid they're going to think he's being derish al mason. So why are we not afraid that a kohen is going to do this? Says Rebbe Chasman, because what's the difference between a kohen and a nazir? A kohen, you got to be born into the family. It's not like anyone can do it. There's a certain level of chashivas. But a nazir, anyone could be a nazir. So if anyone could do it, you have to be more afraid that Taka's not the right type of person. Anything that anyone could do, you don't know who's doing it. So this guy could be a nazir, and we don't know, he's going secretly in the back and talking to dead people. So we had to come down hard and say, you can't be metame. But a kohen wasn't by choice. A kohen was born into the family with rules and regulations. When you're born with rules and regulations, but not choishish, you're going to be derish alamis. So writes Bleib Chasman, the mashkiach from Chevron Yeshiva. So what's the status of a nazir? Very unclear. The pasuk writes that the way we look at a nazir, says the Torah, it says over in the pasuk that one of the pesukim refers to the nazir as a nazir Hashem. Nazir Hashem, and the Torah calls him a nazir. So people say it comes from the lashon of crown. He's a king. A nazir is a king. Why is a nazir a king? Because he's controlling his taiva. He's controlling his yetzarah. He's saying, I want to drink wine, I'm not going to. I want to come here, I'm not going to. I want to become... He's in control. That's a real melech. Someone who's in control is deemed a melech. Yet we find at the end of the parasha, the Torah tells us that a nazir, when he concludes his naziris, he has to bring a karmachatas. Karmachatas? What did he do wrong? So this is a Gemara in Tainus. The Gemara says, because he restricted upon himself yayin and other things, that's called a chayteh. He's a chayta, he has to bring a karmachatas. Machloikis tonight in the Gemara. Some say, pshat in the Gemara, no. The Gemara is talking about a case where he was accidentally metame lemeis. So then he needs to bring a karmachatas. But some say, no, every nazir, when he concludes, he needs to. Why? Because you have no right to restrict upon yourselves tanugi olam hazeh. Says the Ramban in his commentary in Chumash, that's not the pshat. Do you know why he brings a karmachatas? Because he ended something that was good. Why are you stopping the nazir? Keep it going. It's such a beautiful thing. Why are you stopping it? Keep on going. Continue to be a nazir. Oh, you're stopping it, says the Ramban. That's a chet. So I heard from Rabbi Rosner on a recording. He wants to suggest this is maybe Ramban Lushitosoi. Famous Ramban of Parshas Kedoshim. The Ramban says that you have to asur on yourself even those things that are permitted. The Ramban writes, you're not supposed to be a novel Berushas HaTorah, which means I'm not allowed to eat kosher food. You know, Chesidish Shechit, the Chal of Yisrael, Pas Yisrael, I shouldn't indulge in those things also. So there means the Ramban sheet is that although we live in a world, but there's an idea of precious of Olam Hazeh. So that's why the Ramban thinks that Nazirus is not such a bad idea. The Rambam in the Rambam sheet is not like that. The Rambam holds that Nazirus is a bad thing. Because the Rambam is of the opinion that, first of all, extremism is never a good idea. The Rambam was a very big proponent of down the middle of the road. Extremism in either way is no good. And secondly, the Rambam felt that that's not the way to live life. The Rambam felt the way a person lives life is by enjoying this world. And this is the way the Nesiv HaShalom puts the two together. The perfect way of living life is taking the Gashmias and making it Ruchni. This is really the Chassidish Mahal Chachayim. It's not to separate yourself from Gashmias. It's take the Gashmias and bring it up into Ruchnias. That's really the perfect way of living. Nebuch, you have a person who can't do that, so he becomes a Nazir. He can't live that lifestyle. But the preferred way of living life, says the Nesiv HaShalom and others, is to take the two ideas, take the Gashmias and we mekadesh it through Ruchnis. And that's how we resolve the two different types of outlooks of the Nazir. The Chassam Sofer says a beautiful word. It says in the Gemara in Tainis, on that Gemara of Nazir, it says, Kol HaYoshev B'Tainis Nikru Chayte. Anyone that makes fast days upon himself is called a sinner. It says the Chassam Sofer, yeah, look at the Lashon of the Gemara. Kol HaYoshev B'Tainis. It means he sits on a fast day. Means he's not doing anything with it. He's just sitting on it. Yeshiva means he's not moving up. If a person goes through fast days and all he does is goes hungry and never changes him spiritually, that's taka kol chayte. You're not doing anything. We've mentioned this many times. The Rambam writes Mefurish and Hilchos Tainus that the purpose of fast days are to do tshuva. Today in Klai Yisrael, we totally lost sight of this. Today fast days are just days we don't go eat. We don't eat, so we spend the whole day hungry. And very rarely do we even think about spirituality throughout the day. So according to the Rambam, that's not the purpose of the fast. The purpose of the fast is to do tshuva. I've said this story over many times, because I repeat, I had a Talmud of mine who once missed a day on a fast day. So I asked him, where were you? He told me he was in bed. I said, okay, why? He said, I was watching ESPN the whole day on the fast day. So I told him, I said, it's Yitochin, you weren't yet to the fast. That's not what the purpose of the fast is, just to kill the time, to pass through. You know, we all do this, and we're all guilty of this. We try to pass time on a fast day. That's really not the idea. The idea is really to have the fast day change who we are. So the doctor, I'm sorry, that's chat in the Gemara. Called Hayosha B'Tanis means you sit on a fast day. You don't do anything. You don't get moved. You don't move up. You don't have an aliyah, spirituality. That's taka called the chayti. You're not doing anything. If you're not doing anything, then you taka a chayti. Said the Alta from Kelm, you know why we hold the Nazir, according to Ramban, as a Taina for not continuing as Nazirus? Because there's no Taina in any one of us why we don't become a Nazir. We're not expected to become a Nazir. But once you decide to become a Nazir, and you did it for 30 days, why stop now? Again, we're not expected to rise above normal society and become a Nazir. But you did, says the Alta from Kelm. You became a Nazir. You did it. So for 30 days, you were able to forgo certain Tanugei Mazir. Why stop now? Once you did it, so you showed you the ability to escape, but now it's a time on you for stopping. That's how the Altam Kelm explains the Ramban. But it's not a time on why we're not Poyrish or Moil Mazer. We're not supposed to be. But if you already showed that you could do it, and then you don't do it, then it's a bigger time. Just to wrap up the end of the parasha about the Karbonis. There's something very important about the Karbonis. We read them on Chanukah, read them on Parashas Nosei, and we know each person, each Nosei's Karbon is exactly the same as the others. Says Rabbi Frani, points this out, he says, the second Nasi was presented with a major dilemma. The Sanal ben Suar, after he saw what the first Nasi brought, he said to himself, I have two choices. I can outdo him, or I can do exactly like him, and set a standard for Klai Yisrael that we don't have to outdo each other. Zog to Rabbi Fran, that Nisanal ben Suar, you know what he did? He did the greatest taiva for Klai Yisrael. Halavai, we continue learning from this message. He did the favor of, I don't have to outdo you. I can do the exact same thing you did, and it's okay. Today we live in, everyone's trying to outdo the other one, right? You had 5 pieces of at a band, I'm going to have 12 pieces of at the band. We always try to outdo each other. The Nesim realized that this was going to happen. So Nisanal ben Suar decided, I'm not going to outdo anyone. I'm going to do exactly like what you did. We're all equal. We could all be the same carbon. And although we all brought the same carbon, the Torah doesn't just write, on the third day he brought the same as the second day. The Torah writes explicitly what each person did. You know why? Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu loved what each Nasi did. Because since each Nasi was copying to create shalom instead of creating a fight, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves it. Although you'll say, it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each Nasi who copied the Nasi before him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so beloved. Because he's showing, I don't want to create fights and amass in Klai. So I want this to be, we're all bringing the same thing. Who brought the third day? So the Pasuk tells us, the third day was, the second day was Nisanal ben Suar. And what Sheva was he from? He was from Yisachar. What Shevet is Yisachar? Yisachar is the Shevet of Torah. Says the Medrash, you know why he thought of this Einfal? Because he was Torah. Person learns Torah, he has a different way of thinking. He thinks with the Torah to go ahead. That's why this Nasi thought of this idea. It's because he had what we call Das Torah. He had a cup from Torah in it. He thought, this doesn't make any sense to start create this type of period. And therefore he was Zoiche, and that's why he was able to be Meskaber. Who was the next person in line? Says the Medrash, Shevet Zvulun. Why, says the Medrash? Because Shevet Zvulun has the shittuf, that partnership with Yisachar. Yisachar learns the Torah, Zvulun supports the Torah. And because of the partnership, he was next to go. There's a Shita Mukubetzes, we spoke about this in the Halachashir. The Shita Mukubetzes, Paskins and Ksubis, although there's a din that you're not allowed to spend more than a fifth of your money, you're allowed to spend a fifth of your money on Torah. Says the Chafetz Chaim, you know why? Because when you give a fifth of your money to Torah, it's not stalker. It's a business deal. You become a partner with the Torah. That's not tzedakah. When I give money to a person who needs money, that's tzedakah. Says the Chafetz Chaim, when you support Torah, you become a shutif with the Torah. You're a partner. It's partially your Torah. You're allowed to make business deals more than a chaimish. If I want to buy a big building and spend more than a fifth of my assets, no one says anything. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that's the pshat. And that's why Zvulun was the third. Right after Yisachar and Zvulun, because they're the partnership. They go together. It's Yisachar and Zvulun. They always go together. And we find the same thing in Sefer Bamidbar, Parshas Bamidbar. The Baal Turim says that when it talks about Yisachar and Zvulun, there's no U. It doesn't say U Zvulun. Because Yisachar and Zvulun are one entity. Yisachar is a partnership, a real, legitimate partnership. And everything is split. Or at least as Machloek Yisachar, should everything be split. The Shach and Yardei passes, everything is split. The Schosim are split, and the money is split. Which means if Zvulun is making $500 million, Half of that's going to Yisachar learning in Kail. And half the schusim maybe of Yisachar goes to Zvulun. It's a real meaningful partnership. And therefore, Zok the Torah, that's why Zvulun merited to go right after Yisachar. Not just because he gives Torah. He's a shutev, he's a part of the Torah. And therefore, he followed shortly right after Yisachar.